that can be derived from the following. The question is that we know in Yadis that Yadis is a very rational system, and it's based upon human nature, and the advice that the Torah gives and the Chazal give, are based upon the realities of human nature. And the question is, there's always a question. The question is that, you know, we have a phrase, it's a catchword almost, Chabdeu v'chashdeu. Chabdeu v'chashdeu means, no matter who it is, you respect them and you suspect them. Learn from English too. Respect them and suspect them. Chabdeu v'chashdeu. So, the question is, I mean, how far does this go? You're always suspicious of somebody. You're always supposed to be suspicious of somebody. You never trust anybody. Is that really the ideal of Yadus? And no matter who it is, you always suspect them? But the phrase Chabdeo v'chashdeo, it's based on a Gemara in Kalara Basi. And I was thinking about it. What does it mean? You always suspect somebody, you never trust anybody. That's really the ideal of Yadus. It doesn't make any sense. Really, in this week's parasha, you see that that's not true. Why? Because you know that Yosef really planned a whole elaborate system of trapping the brothers. And first he gave them back their money. I mentioned once, what was the purpose of giving back the money? Because everything was planned very brilliantly, psychologically. How to trap them. They weren't stupid people. And they'd immediately see something was going on, something funny was going on. So he had to be very cautious in everything he did and to trap them. They were able to trap them psychologically before he could do anything. For instance, when he first called them spies, can you just call people spies? He said, well, what's going on here? Is this trumped up charges? And they start figuring out, well, what is this? So what he did was, he did it very brilliantly. He knew their emotions. And he had already spies waiting for him to come. He knew they were going to come, just a matter of time. And they were waiting by every gate, checking the people. And the moment they came, they came in different gates, and they brought back the information to him. So they saw that he was working, he had a whole intelligence system. So he said to them, he started questioning, how come you guys came in different gates? So then they said, well, we lost a brother. And we thought that maybe he's here. So Rashi wasn't over. So then he says, and what would happen if you'd find him? So that was a delicate question. Right? Because he knew, or he suspected that by then they were sorry for what they had done. Because the emotion was gone, it was an emotional decision. It was a decision according to halacha. It wasn't a totally unjust decision. And the proof that it wasn't a totally unjust decision is the fact that they never said that they were totally sorry for what they did. Interesting thing. They never said that. They never said we never should have done that. They said, the first thing they said was, Hashem and Achmachin, Hashem and Achmachin, Hashem and Achmachin, Hashem and Achmachin, That's what they didn't say. They made a mistake. They didn't say it was a total mistake. They said that he was pleading with us, and we didn't listen to him. Okay, boy, we're not so. What does it mean that he was pleading? It meant to say that there's a halacha in Sanhedrin. You can't have a bezdin without midas harachamim. So they said it was a wrong. The bezdin, we didn't have a correct bezdin because bezdin must have midas harachamim, and we didn't have midas harachamim. We have zayis. Their argument, of course, was, as I mentioned, as reminded me, that that their argument was that the father was really setting him up as the next leader, and they felt he wasn't capable of being next leader. He will destroy all the father's role because he went from one to the other, bringing the Lashon Hara from one to the other, and they said such a person doesn't be the leader. So it was a just claim that they had against him. And the father gave him the son as possum, meant that he's next in line. They said, he's going to destroy all the Torah, a man like this. But the second, so the first reason was that Midas Achzoris, but the second thing was, because he was really only yellow, like the Ramban says. And he should have realized he had these bad traits, but it doesn't mean that he won't grow out of them. It was a stage, a youngster. And because we didn't have Midas Achzoris, we didn't look into it deeply enough. We looked into it deeper, we would have seen that that we may have made a mistake. It's not the brothers were just unwilling to accept him. If he was really a perfected person, the father chose him as the leader, they would accept him. They had a right to choose who his successor is. So when you look into the parts, you see everything was, every detail worked out. Now, he knew that by then that they would already have had a hurry to, they would have had some remorse for what they did. So he said to them, he said, so why did you come into the gates? So they said, because to find my brother. So what would you do if you find him? So they said, we came to either kill or be killed. So they wanted to show him how loyal they were. It was putting in motion. But they wanted to show him on the contrary, the leader, show him how loyal they are to their brother. They thought that would impress him. They said, we would kill for him. I said, that's what I said in my letter. You people admit that you break the law. You have no respect for the law. And your own admission, you have no respect for the law of the country. And that's why I say that, they immediately said they take these people away. So he trapped them into making a statement against the government. That's the worst thing a person can do. If a person is interrogated by the government, he has to be very careful. Any word that he says against the government is treason. So he trapped them by their emotion into making a statement against the government, against the law of the government, the law of the country. And then he had justification for having them incarcerated. But every move was planned precisely. And the same thing was done with the gavia, with the cup. What was the whole thing with the cup? Because the pasuk says that when they sat down together to eat, so what did he do? So, you see, first what he did was he made them suspicious by putting the money back in the saddlebags. And then when they came, they said that this is all a plan, all a plot to have us killed. So, to prove that we're spies. But then what happened was that he said, on the contrary, he made a big suitor for them. No! Kasbach and boy loy! So why are you suspicious of me? And if you want a person not to be suspicious of you, so if you cause them to be suspicious, and you show that they're wrong, then it's very difficult for them to be suspicious again, because they see they made a mistake. It's a psychological truism. So he used that mechanism in order to, that they should not be suspicious in the future, because he wanted to carry out a further plan, and he wanted to remove suspicion. So it was a psychological ploy that he used. So, what was the... So then what he did was like this. So what was this whole party? He made a whole suda for them. What was the whole suda? It shows you one thing. It shows you that when you look back at Egypt, that it wasn't such a terrible, society, a system as we imagined. First of all, you see that, by Potiphar too. Potiphar was a very fair individual, because he saw the moment he brought Yosef into the house, and Yosef was a brilliant financial advisor, he took over his house, and he sees that everything he's doing now, he's making more money than ever before. He's more successful than ever. But he wasn't an ingrate, because he appointed him on his house. And that's a matter of fact, that's what, he was a fair person. You see, what did he do? He appointed him over his household, and that's what Yosef said to his wife. He said, he was a very, apparently he was a fair person, he wasn't an ingrate. He recognized Yosef, and he gave him everything. So you see, it wasn't like we imagine that the people always imagined that in those days that everything was so crazy, so corrupt. On the contrary, you see, there were fair people who lived in that society. But people was a very fair individual, and Yosef over here showed extreme fairness. What was the idea of the suitor? The idea was that here you suspect people. You suspect these people, so you place people under suspicion, and now if you're wrong, you can't let the suspicion go. Like in this country, it's very bad. This part of the country, the person is under suspicion, and then later, after years, they exonerate him, and they suffer for the rest of their lives because of the bad man. There are cases like that. There were people that are arrested, their lives are ruined because they were suspected. And once they suspected the spies, what happened with the McCarthy era? Was after these people were, even though people that weren't guilty, most of them weren't guilty, and there was nothing to court, a single person. And MacArthur was over here. I can give a quite a single individual that was really spot. But it was all trumped up system, whether it was an anti-Semitic system, and it was in order for him to gain power, and it was a corrupt, tremendous corruption in the government that went against all the Jews, and these people's lives were ruined forever. Forever they were ruined. Whatever they were, whether professors or all prestige was gone once they were under suspicion. But you see, Yosef didn't handle himself that way. Why? He made a big pseudo, and it was on the contrary. He warned, I made a mistake, so he honored them. Took them into his house, private pseudo. He didn't allow them to walk away being suspect. And everybody knew that. No, these were on the contrary. They thought these were important people. And they shared a meal with the prime minister. So, you see, the system was very fair. That if the person was really was accused falsely, So they were exonerated, and they didn't have to suffer the taint of the suspicion. So that's why he made this whole suda. And in the suda, he did a very clever thing. So what he did was that he had them sit before him, like according to their ages. So Vayeshu l'fan of Chorak b'Chorasa Tzarkis Yosef Vayismu Anashim Yisharei. Were astounded. Like, how could he possibly know that? So they got the impression that this is some kind of community. Of course, they didn't believe that it was Menachet, but he had this gavia, and it says he's mocking the gavia. And he said, Reuven, Shatir, and Shimon, etc. So he made it appear as if he divined the information. But that was something, of course, the brothers knew what that was. That was something which they used to do for the Hamon, because if you want to scare the Hamon, so the way to scare them is to make them think that you have superpowers. But actually, it was done with a system of intelligence. And the brothers thought that this is, it's amazing how he finds out every detail. He really was suspicious, and he really found out every detail of our family life. So, but then he had a good pretense already to lodge a complaint against Binyamin. Because when Binyamin came, he had all the breasts down. But then when he got to Binyamin, he says, this one doesn't have a mother. And he said, I don't have a mother either. He sits next to me. So he showed identification with identity identifies with him, and that's why he treated him far better than the other ones. That was, of course, to evoke the same envy that to see if they really were a cause of the tumor. They evoked the same situation as it was before. So, but meantime, because of that, he was able to, when he placed the gavia in the Amtachas Binyamin, and when they caught Binyamin, so he had a good accusation. What was the accusation? The accusation was that you fellows really see that I can use this gavia to divine information. That's why you stole the cup. And why Binyamin in particular? So the Medrash says very nicely. Binyamin in particular, because he has a lost brother that you're looking for. So he wants to steal a cup to be able to find out where his brother is, you see. So he had the pretense of a good accusation. He didn't have an accusation, let's say a good accusation. That's why Binyamin stole the area. That's why he stole the area. What? Because in other words, they used to try to fool the people into thinking that they have superpowers. So they would fool the people. In other words, they'd find that information through... Oh, because he may believe it's the cup that gives him this information. The cup was something like a magical diviner. Yeah. Now we do. And by the order of seating, so he said, that's why Binyamin was the one that stole it, because he's looking for his brother, and it would be natural. He sees that I have all this information from this cup, so he believed that he too was being, on the level of the Hamon. He didn't know them. He didn't know the level of the Hamon, so that's why he stole the cup. He had a good pretense. Everything had to be worked out meticulously. So therefore, he was justified. You have to have the written complaint has to make sense. You can't just put a cup in somebody's possession and say you stole it. You have to have a charge that at least ostensibly makes sense. So that was really all. It was all worked out psychologically in order to demonstrate that there was a legitimate reason for complaint. But, kept on telling him, he said it one time. He said, well, come in here. Yeah, he believes in God. Why doesn't he believe in God? He just doesn't believe in God.
Doesn't that break down his...
Yeah, he believes in God. He just believes in God. What? The money the second time is a good question. See, personally, I think the money the second time, I mean, I think the money to get something, but in my opinion, the money the second time wasn't like the money the first time. The money the first time was really done in order to arouse suspicion, and then... Then shows him that the suspicions were not were falsely grounded. But the second time was just a matana, baby. Took him into the house and said, give him the money back. Because that was the second time, there was a legitimate reason why I gave him the money back, was in order to make up for the fact that he suspected them and to pay them back. He invited him to his house and pay them back, and he showed that this is a fair country. If somebody really is not and not doesn't deserve suspicion, we make it up to them, we repay them, and we honor them. That was all part of the system. I mean, the government was in many ways was much more fair than our government today. An interesting thing. But that was probably, that very well could be because of Yosef. That could very well have been because of Yosef. Yosef taught Pharaoh how to run a government in a way, because the main thing is, no matter who a person is, a king doesn't mean anything. A king is very nice, but everybody that's a ruler must have the approval of the master. Else the master rebels. There's no such thing as a ruler. Yeah, he has the position. He only has the position as long as the people want him to have the position. A lot of rebellions in those days, too. And Yosef taught him how to gain the favor of the people through these psychological methods. You don't just suspect somebody and then just let them go away. Everybody was satisfied. Everybody was happy. It was a fair kingdom. So the people really, that's why power was so great. That's why Yosef was the greatest boon to power. Yes? No, he had power. That was private. It's his own person. Private, if I have a reason. They knew that Yosef was established, and what he does, he knows what he's doing. And he was the prime minister. He didn't have to explain himself to anybody. They trusted him. They trusted him implicitly. That's the use of power. That's the proper use of power. You use power properly. You don't have to explain everything you're doing if you have power. The person who does that is a fool. Yes? Yeah, it's similar, but Christianity is worse. Because, no, it's true. Christianity is more backward than the Egyptians. Because the Egyptians believed in one supreme being. They believed in one supreme being, and the only thing is that they couldn't relate to that supreme being. So, in any way. As a matter of fact, I mentioned this a number of times. If you study the Wallace Budge, the foremost Egyptologist of the turn of the century. He wrote many, many books on Egypt. He was one of the first ones to tomb, a big scholar. He says, if you look at their writings, you see that they believe in one God, and they even write some praises to the one God. But that's it. That's the end of it. The whole religion is involved in these sub-deities and the most infantile, childish types of activities and rituals in relationship to the sub-deities. Because they couldn't, and that's what Yadis is. Yadis isn't simply recognition of one God. Yadis is recognition of the fact that we relate only to the one God. That's really what monotheism is. The world makes a mistake when they say that Yadis' uniqueness is monotheism. Not simply monotheism, one God. The Egyptians also believe in one God. But they were more advanced than the Christians because the Christians believe in three. Christians, when they made Yeshua into a part of the Godhead. That's more primitive. That's more primitive. Egyptians are a little less primitive. But anyway, so getting back to this, it's funny. A modern man is such arrogance that he looks at these societies as being more primitive than his. And the truth of the matter is that in many ways that society was more advanced, especially under the rule of Yosef. Imagine Yosef introduced a whole new type of thinking there. So, yeah. No, no, he never says that. I tell you, he never. Everybody quotes the Rambam that he never said that. The Rambam said Christianity is the worst thing to Avodah Zarah. It was the worst horror, one of the worst horrors that ever befell the world. If not the worst, it was a horror. The Christianity is responsible for every distortion of all the deaths of millions of the Jews, including the Holocaust. If it wasn't Christianity, you couldn't have had the Holocaust either. And many historians have made that statement, it's true when you think about it. That all the Rambam says is, the Rambam just says one thing. He says that when you look at history, and a person wants to see the Hashgacha, of course you have to be careful when you do that, you have to be a great chacham to be able to do that, the Rambam can do it. And the Rambam says that there is one thing that you see here that is a remarkable phenomenon. And that is that the whole world, somehow or other, came to recognize Torah. In a distorted way, but nevertheless they recognize it. The whole world knows about Avraham Avinu. Before the Septuagint, no one knew about it. Just a small one group of people. But then the Tirgum HaShivim, as a matter of fact, by the Tirgum HaShivim, as I mentioned, it was a day of Avelus, a day of kindness, because the system was getting at, it means the system is being given over to others, and it's a horrible thing. But the fact is, the Rambam says you can't deny the other aspect of it, namely that the whole world knows about the Torah and the authenticity of the Torah. So he says that when Mashiach comes, now they just have to show that this is what the Torah was talking about, and then everybody will accept. So it says, so in that sense, it laid the groundwork, but not as an intrinsic benefit. Intrinsically, it's a horror. The worst thing. Hey, Rei Olana Yosem, we call Adme, we call Malchi Adama. It's the people you're saying, Yom Kippur, it's referring to the Romans, the Christians. Okay. So anyway, so at any rate, the getting back to this. So that was the plan, but it's an interesting thing. The question is, once they caught them, of course, the response was interesting. But there's one little point there, and I think that's what I started with. I started with the question of, should you be suspicious of everyone? Is that the proper ideal of Yadus? What does Yadus maintain? No, you have to trust people. Okay, you have to trust people. Yeah. That's okay. I can agree with you sometimes. You see from this incident that they did trust somebody. Who did they trust? They trusted them. Because when he caught them, what did they say? They said, Vayasig him, and he told me, says, Loma Shilantem Raw Tapastova. After all, I treated you so nicely. How could you repay? How could you act this way to me? To steal the coast? Steal my coast? Don't you know that I use this coast for a lichush? He didn't care whether they thought it's a prop or it's not a prop, but the fact is it's an important article in my house. How could you do such a thing to me? So they said, Chalila lava dechamel seskina reza. Heaven forbid we do such a thing. We brought back the money, so how can we say we're going to steal something new? And then they said, whoever is found guilty of stealing this coast should be put to death. Not only that, we also will become slaves. Alright? So what do you see? You see one thing. You see that they didn't just think that you can't trust any individual and somebody's going to do something crazy. Because they knew 100% that Binyamin or anybody, any one of them, would never steal, would never do a crazy action like that. And that's why they said whoever's found guilty should be put to death. If the principle was that you don't trust another person, you could say a person can always go crazy, can always go off his mind, always do something wild, then they would never make a statement like that. Because that would be the death sentence for one of the brothers. They didn't know which one at the time. But you see the halacha says that they did it. The only thing is that later, unfortunately, when that happened, they switched their verdict. They changed it. And they said, no. They said, Hineinu avon ladoni gam anachti gam ashenu tzvi biyado. They will all be slaves. But they got rid of the death penalty. But the fact that they said that shows you that they had implicit faith, 100%, that that he would never do a crazy thing like that. None of the brothers would ever do a crazy thing like that, for any reason whatsoever. I knew that these were sensible people. I knew that they would never do an act which is crazy. No. That was because. No. That's precisely what I was saying before. That what was it? Why didn't he put the money? Why did he give him the money first? Because if you want a person not to be suspicious of you, the best way is to have them be suspicious and show them they were wrong. So they came back. They were suspicious. They were being brought into this house because they wanted to trump up charges against them. It was all a plot. And then he said, "No, show them a chalati. Oh, God gave you a gift. Let's go. Let's have a suitor. Are you happy?" So then they felt guilty that they suspected him. So this is a just ruler. Now they're never going to suspect him again. They're going to try to. He proved that it is not that kind of a person. You see, that was the whole plot. That was the plan. That was the psychological play. In order to have them feel guilty about the fact that they suspected him. That's when you get a person. It's an interesting psychology. I don't think it's dope. I'm just saying. You're not allowed to fool a person. Not for dinner, you're a fool person. But it happens to be a true psychological ploy. That if somebody's suspicious of you falsely, and then they see they made a mistake, then they won't be suspicious again. It's one step further removed, because you have like a reaction formation against that type of an emotion. I was wrong. So that's why they didn't suspect him next time. That's why in the conference they said, "No, it was time to put to death." And they didn't suspect that it was that he tried. He could have tricked him at first. Why is he doing now? He had the perfect opportunity. Mm-hmm. That's how he proved that. That's how he set the stage for the next for his next maneuver. His next maneuver. It's a good for politicians enough. But the yes. Yeah. Exactly. That's what I meant to say. He tricked them into that because he knew they were guilty about selling their brother. He knew that. So that's why he knew that in order to compensate for the guilt, they would say, "We're ready to kill for him." You see? And then he knew he hasn't. But now they said that now they spoke against the government. That's how he trapped him. That's what it is. He's an unbelievable chachma he used in order to have. He couldn't just accuse them. They'd know there's something crazy going on there. But he tricked them into saying, and they're on the contrary. They were on the emotional. He knew they were going to say, because he knew that they felt guilty about killing their brother. So therefore, what did they say? So they're going to try to impress him on the contrary, that they're not. See, you have to understand how it works. When someone is suspicious of you, the main thing that works is your own guilt. Now, if somebody starts being suspicious of you, it brings back the real guilt. They had a real guilt. What was the real guilt? They sold their brother. That was the real guilt. Now somebody's accusing you of being dishonest, of being deceitful, of performing some kind of treachery. So what do you immediately do? You immediately think of your own real treachery and you cover up for it. So therefore, the accuser says, "What would you have done if you were found your brother?" So we would have done anything for our brother, because they were talking themselves out of their own guilt. We were ready to fight and to kill for our brother. So because of that, so they were trying to impress him with the fact that they're not guilty, referring to which guilt? The true guilt that they had about their brother. But they were trying to impress, what they saw in him was not really his particular case, but in their mind's eye, it threw them back into the real case, their real guilt. And they were answering him personally, but they were really answering, actually they were answering, if you want to say, they were answering their father. But the father was the one that, the father was the one that really, that made them answer, "Where is Yosef?" So he knew the psychological ploy that he's going to throw them back into a different state where they're not going to be answering him anymore. They're going to be answering the real accusation against him. They're going to try to show him, "No, on the contrary." But then he brought them back into reality. He says, "Oh, you fellows are admitting that you really don't respect the laws of this government. Are you ready to violate governmental law?" "That's what I said. It was fine. He's just speaking against the government. He's speaking against our system." And then they realized they made a mistake. And they saw that he was right. Because then reality struck, and they said, "Well, one second, he's right. How can we say we're going to break the laws of the government?" Had nothing to say. That's it. That was like that. It was an ingenious ploy, a maneuver, to get them. He knew psychology in depth, and how to maneuver the emotions, and cause a person to slip because of his emotional reaction. The key is, of course, in doing such a thing, is to get a person to flip back into a state because of emotions that is not the situation that's in front of him, but it brings him into his state. He's really answering another case. He's answering a case that's in his unconscious, that's in his, well, it's actually conscious, it's in his preconscious, in other words, in his subconscious, that he's answering. And because of that, he's out of reality and he goes off. It was a brilliant maneuver, So, I had to get him to make a statement against the government, trying to exonerate himself. Yeah, but you see one thing. You see that, so what I want to say is like this. That the chabdeyu v'chashdeyu, that we say that you have to respect the person and suspect the person, is not really true. That you always suspect everybody. I mean, that's not true. That you only suspect people, even if he's a Talmud Chacham, he knows he's a learned person, it still doesn't mean that he's a just person, necessarily. It could be, you always have a right to be suspicious. It could be he's a lomed shelo lishmo, maybe he's lomed lakanta, maybe he has his own agenda. It's not a guarantee. So you have to suspect him, but that's only until you know. And I checked up the source for the Chabdeo Chashdeo is Masechta Kalarabas. And it says exactly that. It's amazing. It says in the Gemara like this. In the Masechta. It's not a regular Masechta, but Masechta Kalarabas, it says that they asked this question. He asked a question like this. It's Kalara Bossi Perek Tes. It says, La'olam yu kol adam chashidim beinecha kalistim. Everyone in your eyes should be suspect like a gunner, like a crook, like a thief. So the Gemara says, Eini, it's not so, what nano kodnes chavecha chakagilam komo. I said you shouldn't judge another person until you get to this place. How right do you have to judge the person as being dishonest, being deceitful, being crooked? The Gemara says, "Lo kasha, kan b'makir, kan b'shena makir." In one case you know the person, in one case you don't know the person. You don't know the person, so you have to suspect them like a listener. But that's the rational thing to do. You're not always suspect them like a crook. Rav Amar, Rav says, "Hocha kol adam, hocha chavecha." Over here it says, "Lo lo niyu kol adam chashina meinacha." But can be, and over there it says, "Altodnes chaveicha chetagilim kama." So Rava says that's the difference. The difference is kol adam in general. So you're supposed to be suspicious. But chaveicha, your friend, someone who is your friend, there you're not allowed. There, on the contrary, there, if you know your friend, you must have trust in him. You must have trust in your friend. And if you don't have trust in your friend, it means that there's something wrong in your personality, because then it lacks in the idea of a chava. A chava demands trust. If you suspect somebody else, then it means even your chava, then it shows you that there's a distortion in your own personality. Now, what is this distortion? It usually is a very simply trace. The distortion is that you yourself aren't trustworthy. That you're deceitful yourself. If you're deceitful, you project deceit onto somebody else. If you consider your chava to be, if you suspect your chava, and you consider him to be capable of acting in a way that's disloyal to you, you can't trust him, that means that you yourself are deceitful. And you're projecting it onto your chaver. Then the person has to work on his own emotion. That's what Chazal said. I wanted to clear that up. I think from this passage in the Torah, you see, that it's true. Because it's very important in Yadus for a person, that's the godless of Yadus, is that Yadus gives the person the norm. It shows him what the norm is. So he knows if he's deviating, he knows where to look and where to improve himself, where to work on himself. That's the whole benefit. That's the benefit of really of the system that's given by Kadosh Baruch Hu through the Torah and through Nevi'im and through Chazal. Because once the person knows what the norm is, he can gauge the reactions in himself and he can see when he deviates, there's something wrong. So it's something which I think it's not commonly known. You know, people say Chabdeyu v'Chashdeyu, or else they say Chashdeyu v'Chashdeyu. Either way, what they're saying is that to be suspicious of another human being is the correct policy, and that's endorsed by Torah. On the contrary, it's not endorsed. It's correct if you don't know the person. You have to assume that way. That's true. You have to Chabdeyu v'Chashdeyu. You have to respect him because he's really, he could be a very fine individual, but you should be careful. But that's not a problem. Against the chaver, if a person is suspicious, there's something wrong. There's something wrong with distorting his own personality. Yes. Oh. The person, you mustn't underestimate the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara is very great. So you do that, you're a fool. You're going to believe somebody else because he's a thin person. That's Allah. People are deceitful. People appear as pious, as religious, as tzaddikim, and they aren't. You can't trust them. Yeah. But their impression doesn't mean that kind of chavra. It means that there's a kesher between every Jew in terms of his commitment to Yadus and being a tzelem alakim and have certain midos. And so, yeah, it's true. That doesn't mean that every Jew is honest and he's not going to be deceitful. You can trust every Jew with all your money and all your possessions. No, sir. That's one principle that you derive from this process. There's another principle, I think, is equally important, more philosophical, as a matter of fact, and it's something which is a difficult area, but it's an important area, and I'm afraid, especially in our yeshiva, that a lot of times this area is overlooked. Because philosophy, of course, is very important, but the danger with philosophy is that people who don't understand the philosophy use it as a takeoff to justify keeping away from things that are painful. And they use the philosophy in that manner. And really, again, of course, it's when people understand philosophy, they immediately feel a certain sense of superiority. And the superiority is because they feel superior to others who don't understand the philosophy. But what they fail to recognize is that they haven't really changed their nature just because you've gained a philosophical insight. To change your nature is more difficult than just gaining a point in philosophy, a philosophical point. Change your nature is the hard work, the difficult work. That's something that is not easily accomplished, and the emotion of feeling, the feelings of superiority are very easily accomplished. So people get caught when they gain knowledge. They get caught up in this trap, usually, that they feel superior, and then they laugh at everybody else, and then immediately they abandon all types of practices that the other people do, many of which are really correct, but they feel they're on a superior point. This week's Pasha, again, I think is a very important principle contained here. And that is, and again, I spoke about the response of the brothers. What was the response of the brothers? They said, they stated an interesting way. They said, Vayama Yehuda, Mano Maladomi, Manidaber Manitztadak. It's almost like they're talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Holekim Motza Savona Vagacha. Einenu Avar Madani. That's what they're saying. Mano Maladomi, Manidaber Manitztadak. That's it. Holekim Motza Savona Vagacha. They said that this is an act of Hashkacha. We're chayev, not because of what you claim against us, but we're chayev because of an old star. And that's what we have to pay. That's what they said there. Elokim matzah tavon avadah. So they said that this situation, all these trumped up charges, are really false, but we have nothing to say because there's a real charge against us, and that's the charge that really we can't answer. Manomar, manadaber, manadaber. And where did this start? It started, amazingly enough, it started before, right away, in the beginning. When the moment that Yosef worked at his whole elaborate trick of catching them and discovering that they went into different gates and then bringing the charges against them, the spies and the whole, and then trapping them into making statements against the government, he had a right to incarcerate them. After that whole trick, so what do they say? Okay, and then it says Reuven added something. And then he says four more words. His blood is being sought by God. So what did he add? So apparently what they said was that this is Hashgacha. This is Hashgacha. He said, Aval Hashem, Anachno Lachinu. So how do they know this is Rav Yochanan? How do they know it's Rav Yochanan? And then he added Gam Damo Hinei Midrash. What did he add? The Gam Damo Hinei Midrash. What was it? What was that more than what they were saying? See, they were saying the same thing. Aval Hashem Menachem Alachinu. Okay. The act of Hashgacha Lechayit. But no, the Gam Damo Hinei Midrash. What's the difference? So really, it's based on a Gemara in Brachas. The Gemara in Brachas says that if a Teroish and Yisuin born alive, and a person sees that tragedies are befalling him, so it says you're frustrated for myself. The person has to look into his actions. And Rashi says over there, because Nachbasa Rechena means that we should Nachbasa Rechena Lechapes means to search, to uncover, to dig, to discover. Nachbasa Rechena. Person has to search into a situation, look into it deeply. Nachkora. Chakira means to think about it, to evaluate it, to ponder it. It's like a person ponders a chakira in the patients in the Gemara. He has to ponder in this area also, in the area of his personal life. Then the Nashuva Adarachim. Then there's a tshuva. But if there's no Nachbasa Adarachinu and there's no Nachkara, then the tshuva is very, very, very little significance. I mean, the tshuva is always good, but it's not the real tshuva. So that's what the Pasuk says. It's the Pasuk in Eicha. So Chazal say that a person should always look into his actions. And then the Gemara says, peace, peace, for all muscle. Let's say, for instance, he did look in it, he didn't find, couldn't find anything. So then the Gemara says, Niklo Babikul Torah. Okay, so it means the Chazal have a very cautious kind of an approach, as usual. A person shouldn't assume that he knows the Hashgacha. So sometimes, peace, peace, for all muscle, they search and couldn't find. So then it says, if he's an honest investigator, a good investigator, so he should get a little bit of Torah. In general, it means the general thing that he abandoned Torah. It's not a specific type of honest. But Chazal give us a format here in a person's life, practical to everybody's life. But if a person sees that Yisurim Barnalov is machoyer to look into his own personal situation and to evaluate it and to see if there's something here that's responsible. That's responsible for this onus, for this tragedy. Okay, for these yisurim, for these pains. It's not a major tragedy. Yisurim is only these troubles, there's these problems. So Rashi says, Tishpesh lo motza b'aveira b'yaga. He didn't find an aveira in his hands. She b'shvilo re'uyin yisurim halalu lava. Interesting thing. On the one hand, you say you never know the Ashgach. That's what you can remember. One thing you say, how can we know what God's plan is? We're cautioned in the Torah against trying to think that we know the Ashgach. Shavi, kipach rucham shamachash le'akeits. Anyone who tries to figure out the Zman HaMashiach is kipach rucham, the spirit should decay. It means that these people think that they could know what the Ashgacha is. It's incorrect. But on the other hand, you have a Gemara just the opposite. That says a person is machuyah to search into his personal life and to see if some kind of untoward events occur to him, that he should think into it and to see whether this is really the cause of an avera. As Rashi says, what must he see? He must try to see. Lo matzibiyot avera. That because of this, these Yisurim are deserved. So what does it mean? It's a blanket statement, Rashi. Well, how do I know whether Yisurim are because of this? I just want to know practically. How am I supposed to know? And yet we say there's no guarantee that he's going to find it. Peace, peace, for long, Matzah. Let's say he doesn't find it. Then you go the Bittul Torah. Then he should say that the Yisurim came because of Bittul Torah. As a matter of fact, that's not such a negative anymore. The Gemara says like this: Shenema Ashrei Gever Sheti Asrenu Ko and he saw Raschat Lamben. So Rashi says, Shebishvil Yisurin, Sorach Odom Lovo Lidei Talmatara. Asher Egevashet Yashvenu, call me to Raschat Lamben. It means that sometimes the Yisurin are general Yisurin, which are trying to, that because of, that on the contrary, because of Bittul Torah, so the Yisurin should really, should think in general that the reason why the Yisurin are coming is because he's too involved in mundane and physical kinds of pleasures. And these physical kinds of pleasures are taking his energies away from the important pleasures, the pleasures of Chochmas Torah. And because of that, he should rededicate himself to the Talmud Torah. Okay, to Talmud Torah. Now, but before that, that's the second stance. That's if you don't find anything. But if you do find, then you must say it's because of this Avera. Now, how do I know? What are the earmarks? How do I know that it's because of this Avera? So I think in this week's Pasha, you have the solution. Because there were two statements in there. The first one was, Aval Hashem Manachna Olachina. They explain that the reason, that's the reason. Sharina Tsaras Nafsha means we didn't have Midas Arachim. That's correct. But what motivated them to say that? What motivated them to say that? How did they know it's because of that? After all, years passed by, a lot of things happened. They never said it before. What was so unique over here? They say everything always went their way, always different problems. What was unique over here? Okay. But you see, I would. Yes. You mean, but the only thing is, I think it has to be something more than just suspicion and just the fact that there has to be a connection, a link between this and between the original chet. What is the link? What is the link? The Sephunas says that. Sephunas is a yes answer. I'm not going to reject the check. Says, because we were achzorim against Yosef, and now they're being achzorim against us. That's what's my question. I was thinking of a different shot. I was thinking of shot is that where you're in a situation, searching for Yosef. So they said that it was all the causality is here. Because of the fact that we hadn't done the chur of Yosef, we would have came in normally, like normal human beings. There wouldn't be any reason to suspect us. The major suspicion was, where does a family, how come a family claim to be a family of 10? This is one family, why do you come to them gates? That's not one family, this is, you're making this up. You actually, you're different individuals, and you come, you're spies, and now you're saying that the spy always has to have a cover. Your cover is that you're one family. The one family doesn't work for 10 gates. So therefore, the causality, there's a tie in causality. The causality is because, why did they come through the 10 gates? Was because of the Mechir of Yosef. So whenever there's a causal connection, that I would say is one guideline. That wherever there's a causal connection between the original Maisa Avera and the present circumstances, that is something that a person is supposed to, because he can tie it in. I would say that's the major, that's the first thing a person should search for. Yefashvesh v'maisav means, that's the first thing. And that's true, because what does the Pasuk say? The Pasuk says that the Perak Meinecho Asabit v'shelumas v'shoyim tira. The Pasuk says that the Ra of the Russia destroys him. What? The Pasuk says, to Moses, Russia, Ra. What destroys the Russia is the evil itself. The evil itself. So the first thing a person has to do, that's the first thing, a chacham has to do is think into the situation. And he has to see, this is just one expression, this is one case, one particular case. But there could even be, this is a further type of causality, but there could even be a causality, a direct causality. You see, because of the way your nature was expressed in the fate, and that's what caused you. It changes a certain state of mind. That causes you to be involved in the situation because you went further off of the path. But by the Achim, that wasn't the case. It wasn't so serious that way. It was just a causal connection. Any causal connection, you see, is machai of a person into thinking that this evil that is befalling him is because of the chet. That's what the pasuk means. Then Reuven added, and Reuven said like this. He said, "Along with Amat Rechem Al Tachlev Yalek Rosh Matan, the Gam Domo Hine Nidrash." What did he? What did he add? He added a new dimension. The Gam Domo Hine Nidrash. It means like this. It means wherever you find yourself having to answer for the same claim that the original claim that you had to answer the first time. Okay. In other words, where there's someone that's being dorish you again for that miser. And that is the case over here. What was the big raw? Well, let's get a question. What was the big raw over here? So you have to understand. It says that Al-Kain Bo'elenu Atzar Azaz. What was the big tzara over here? When you think about it, wasn't it a terrible tzara? You have to go. You have to go home, get the brother, come back. Nothing was sealed yet. He really didn't say that they're deaf and mute. He said, no, he gave him a chance. He said, look, I think you're spies. He didn't say that it's signed, sealed, and delivered. He didn't pass verdict over them. He says, is this good reason for me to be suspicious? Anybody who listened to the other would say, you're right, should be suspicious. Come in 10 different gates, and I tell you a story that they're one family. Okay, you'll bring back the brother, and we'll see if you're one family. We'll interrogate you separately. We'll take a look. We'll see. If we find that that everything, we can corroborate everything, we interrogate you, so we find that there are no contradictions in your testimonies when you speak privately with me, and you're really one family. I'm a smart fellow. I know how to interrogate people, catch them on lies. If you pass the test, then fine, then you go free. But if you're not going to be able to prepare in a few days every single detail of your lives, so I'm going to be able to start questioning you on all the little details. You'll never be able to make it if it's a phony. So it may be reasonable, very reasonable, bring your younger brother back and then we'll see. So what? Yeah. What's so terrible? He's a just ruler. Not going to get some Kim in the ERA. He's just a man. He'll be well. We'll take good care of him. Don't worry. He's not a baby. It's not a tragedy yet. It's not a tragedy. There's no tragedy yet. Not a tragedy yet. You just bring, you brought before this fellow, this prime minister, this judge, but he's my judge, but yet you see he's not crazy. He's a fair man. After all, he has reason to be suspicious. The way they entered the land, they knew themselves. He was justified. Moreover, he said he changed his verdict. He was even Baal Chesed. Because it says, I guess it was on Mishnah Soshem. Zos asu v'chiyo tzolakim en yare. So as you know, I want justice. Leave one here. Fair, you have to come back. And then you let them go. Basically, you don't let spies go like that. Actually, what he did was really the nimishus of it. If people are suspicious, and you have a government that's afraid of being undermined, after all, there's a time when everybody's in famine, and they're the only ones they're the only country in the world that has the most valuable commodity that you could possibly have, food. They could charge anything they want for it. So a good, intelligent government would say, look, you fellows are under suspicion. You did something suspicious. No one's leaving here. We're going to, but no, so the king in the era. I'm being Michael, I'm being Mavater. I'm letting you go. I'm letting most of you go. Just one person, just taking, leaving one person there. Really, on the surface, doesn't even make any sense, if you ask me, in terms of security. But he was foregoing, he was showing them he's more than reasonable. More than reasonable. He is giving them, actually, the benefit of the doubt. But nevertheless, he's losing one because the one, what the one is, he knows how to take care of the one. In order to extract the proper information if they don't come back, so he'll be able to destroy them that way. But he's letting, basically, he's letting them go. So therefore, you're correct. That's correct. And the Mishnah, they would have said it, if that was really the problem. So then in the Mishnah, they should have said it. Yes, they didn't even know what was going to happen to them. But now, it's true. The man is correct. Then why didn't they say it in the Mishnah? Then they were all being detained. They didn't know what's going to happen to any of them. They didn't say that yet. When did they say it? That's correct. They said it later. When he says, you go back, you go back, bring your brother. What's the problem? What's the sin? What's the big tragedy over there? Or what's the Avol Hashem and Achim? What's the answer? The answer is, that was the tragedy. What was the tragedy? Tragedy was, they have to go and face their father. That was the tragedy. You see, they knew very well. Now, what was the most difficult thing about the Mechira of Yosef? The most difficult thing was the Yaakov. How do you face, how do they face their father? After all, this was This was the son that he held is going to take over the whole Sarara. He's going to take over the whole Sarara, the Xonus of Possum. He was the one that's going to take over. He was the one that was the successor to Yaakov Avinu. So how do you face your father and answer? Where is Yosef? That's where they worked out. The Xonus of Possum, the Yitzhak Katanus Badam, Zos Matsano, Hakenah, Kassonus Binchah, very intelligent way to say, Hakenah, Kassonus Binchah, Yom Lo. Why did they say Hakenah, Kassonus Binchah, Yom Lo? They didn't know whether it was Yosef's Xonus. Because they wanted to deflect any kind of suspicion from him. We weren't even interested in the Xonus. You know the Xonus. We didn't even look at the Xonus. They wanted to deflect any kind of suspicion that they were jealous of the Xonus. If you're jealous of something, you always look at it very carefully. That's really ayin hara. Ayin hara means the eye. It means that when you're jealous of somebody else's possession, you spy it out. You look at it very carefully. That's the nature of a person. That jealousy has that type of an effect in a person. They said, Hakenah, Ksana is Benchayim Lo. We didn't even notice the Ksana. But you know, is this Ksana? So it was, they planned everything in order because they couldn't face the father. They couldn't face the father. But what happened? What happened was that they thought he'd overcome his avilos. We'll get over it. It'll take him a while. But it wasn't true. Because Yaakov said, no. And he never stopped being Masabo all those years. He was always Masabo. And now they knew that there was one other son, Binyamin. He was the one that took the place of Yaakov. Didn't fully compensate. But that was the closest one now. And now they have to go and they have to demand that he should come with them. They have to make a demand to take away Binyamin. That was the gam domo hine midrash. It meant that now they have to answer not so much for Binyamin really. They were answering again for Yosef. It was because of Yosef that they had to do the most difficult thing with Yosef was to face the father. The gam domo hine midrash. And Chazal say, an interesting, the gam is always a reboot. What does the gam mean? Rashi says on his love, the gam domo hine midrash. Dam Yosef, the Dam Hazakim, the Dam of it. So the moment they saw that was another part of the Cheshbon, that when they didn't consider the father in the Psak Halacha, in the verdict, they didn't take him into consideration. The Gam Dam Ohi Neinidosh, and now they have to answer because of that. So when does a person know if he's nefashpesh b'maisav, if he inspects his actions and he sees that something wrong is occurring to him, some evil is befalling him, he has to say that this evil came because of a certain event. What does that mean exactly? What are the guidelines? So you see from the Torah two guidelines. One guideline is if the causality of the Avera involves you and the causality of the situation are the same. That was what the brothers first said. But there's a second guideline. The second guideline is, if you have to answer for the first deed, if it's an onesh in which you have to answer for the first deed, that's domo hine midrash, so then also you should know that that's because of the chet. That's what those two characteristics. Either causality, or because you have to answer because of the crime. Now they have to answer because of the crime of Yosef. Answer to who? To the one that was the most important one in their lives. Their leader and their father, their Rebbe and their father, Yaakov Avinu. Those are the guidelines. That's your fashesh from Isaac. So it's interesting. Even though we can't read the Hashgacha, we never know if something befalls us, why this is so. Because God's knowledge is infinite, and we cannot really know. But nevertheless, you see, as I'll say, that the Ben Derech HaChayim is a way of being Noheg in Derech HaChayim. This is the way a person should be Noheg, that he has to operate on certain assumptions. Sometimes he has to operate on assumptions. According to his das, even though his knowledge is scanty, his knowledge is not perfect, but in certain situations, man has no choice but to operate according to the best knowledge available. And that should be done in his personal life. When a tragedy befalls him, so he has to stop being nefashesh b'maisav and has to use his intelligence. We have to see if there's a relationship. And if there is a relationship, it could very well be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving him an onesh because of the Avera. And that's what they said in the end. They said, Manadaber Manitzada, Kolotim Motza Savon Avadach. That's what they meant. That this is the Avon, we're chayev, the causality is the same, we're answering for the same kind of Maisa Avera, and that's it. We have nothing to say. And they accepted it. That's when he knew that they were chosen to. That was his plan, basically. That was part of the plan of Yosef. What was the plan of Yosef? Yosef knew the Gemara. Roa shiyisu boyin olov yefash feish b'maisa. He knew the halacha. And the brothers knew the halacha. And he knew that they knew the halacha. And that was his whole elaborate scheme was really based on that one halacha in the Gemara Brachos. That one principle. That when a person is, when a person looks into his own life, a tragedy befalls him, he's mechuyev to try to understand the tragedy according to his level of das, and try to see if this tragedy could be related to a maisa avera intrinsically, either because of causality or because he has to answer for the crime. One of the two. He knew that. He knew that that's what's going to happen. And he knew that's the way he could bring about a tshuva, a complete tshuva on their part. And that's how he was successful. The question that Jeff is asking is like this. That he's saying, why didn't the intelligent people? They're going all over Egypt. They're searching around before they went. So apparently they're gathering information. So why couldn't they gather information that Yosef was an Ivri? Because everybody knew. They indicated Nassau and Yemen, and Yosef was an Ivri. Nassau and Yemen are Ivri, ever the Sarat HaBachan. So why didn't they find out that he's a Jew? And then they'd know that he had to be the brother. He had to be the brother. Good question. Very good question. It was a fact. It was a known fact. That's a good question. Jeff Claus asking how come they didn't find out that he was a Jew. If, well, as we said, it's because they couldn't speak the language of the land, so they weren't able to converse with the people, like walk down the street. That's where you get all the information. You walk down the street. I'm not disagreeing with that. I think there's more to it. You see, if you look back in the Pasha, I spoke about this once before. It says like this. It says, "V'techilenu Hashem v'shnei asava." After the 7 years, so Shehoyah ben Sain, "V'techilenu Hashem v'shnei arav lovo kasher ma'yosef." Vayi rov v'cholavatzachol v'cholavatzachol, that Egypt had bread, and no other land had bread. "V'tirav kol eretz Mitzrayim." "V'yitzak omel paro l'lochem." "V'yom paro l'chol Mitzrayim l'chol Yosef asher yom alochem tase." So here Chazal show that there was something very strange. Because first Yosef is supposed to be in charge. And then it says that they hungered and they went to Paro. What do you go to Paro for? And then Paro says to them, go to Yosef, whatever he says do. Wait a minute, this was already established 9 years or 7 years before. You had Yosef in charge and you go to Yosef. What happened over there? So the answer is Chazal say that when they came to him, so what happened? So he says, Lafisha Yosef Omalem Shiyamuru. But Yosef said they have to circumcise themselves. That's what it means. It means Vakir Khan Yatsukalakan. And then it says, Paro said, go to Yosef, whatever he says, do. So Chazal say an unbelievable thing. That actually they try to store their own grain. And Paro really, you see what happened was like this, that he was a big success story, Yosef, in the beginning. But people are ingrates. They get very quickly, cover up the favors that other people do for them, and they forget it very quickly. And Paro was an ingrate, basically. He was under a lot of pressure, too. And this Jew was a big problem. So what he did was, it's true, he had to show people that when you do something for the Melech, you're rewarded. And he made him prime minister, but during those 7 years where things were so great, and most people are not thinkers, so they go by their emotions, so he felt very secure. The money's coming in, there's the food, there's the prosperity, he's going crazy. So when people are in such a state, they can't think of hunger, they can't think of, usually they don't have the foresight, they're overcome by the emotion of the moment. So he wanted to do one, he wanted to take away the power from Yosef. He tried to deflect their attention from the greatness of Yosef the Jew, and he tried to tell them, look, let's get out from, we don't really need him anymore. He had a very good idea, storing the grain, let him go store the grain. After all, I gave him that, we can't take that away from him, because he's very careful, very cautious, the way he handled himself. But nevertheless, we will take the center of attention away from him. We'll have our own grain, our own system, and we won't need him. Let's get away from this Jew. So he was really taking the power. During those 7 years, power was was trying to take the whole attention of the government away from him. He's not that important. The person came up with a good idea, fine, but that's it. But then what happened was they threw a rabbit. See, because he really planned very carefully. He made a whole study. He knew how to set up experiments to see how grain is preserved, now it's not preserved. And he worked out the right way. He didn't tell them what he did. He didn't tell them how you had to store the grain. They started storing the grain, and grain rotted. So then they came to, that's why they went to Paro, because during those 7 years, Paro had already taken the attention away from Yosef. So they came to him. So he had to admit, he said, go to Yosef, Asher, Yomalachan Tasef. That's it. We have to submit. He's the only one that has an authority. You have to get in. He's the main man in the country. But you see that the fact that he was a Jew, the Shomitonu Nar Ivri, was something which was despicable to the Egyptians, and it was, that's why Kilo Yuchlun Hamitchin Rachol Asayivim Lechem, even when they came, they despised the Jew. So apparently what happened was that the fact that he was a Jew was not an issue. It was not a public issue. It was something they didn't speak about. They didn't speak about it anymore. It was, at the time, yes, but then the government has subtle ways of laying emphasis on different things, and people pick it up, and they know that there's certain things that you're not supposed to know. Authoritarian systems always work that way. And I mean, you have it in an amazing way in Christianity. That Christianity was able to disguise the fact that Jesus was a Jew. I mean, it's an amazing thing. And even to this day, there are people that are intelligent people and don't know this fact, which is like amazing. But authoritarian systems have ways of inculcating in the people certain kinds of signals. They give off certain signals where certain facts are hidden and are disguised, and people only become unaware of it. The same thing happened over there in Mitzrayim. You see that they were taking away, he was taking away all the power, trying to take away slowly the power from Yosef. And the fact that he was a Jew was a despicable thing to them. That fact was really was forgotten by them. After all those years, that fact was hidden. You couldn't pick it up from the man in the street. The man in the street didn't talk about the fact that he was doing it, but it was not. Exactly, yeah. Sofnas Panach, he changed his name from Yosef. He changed his appearance, he's a different person. And he didn't want that story told about the Shomitonu Nar River. And people knew about it, no doubt. But it was something which was squelched by the government. And it was an embarrassment to them. It was squelched by the government, and no one would dare speak about this. They knew it was forgotten from the people. That's why they couldn't. That's why they didn't know. That's the answer to the question. I mean, the famous question: why didn't Yosef send a letter to his father all those years? The answer is because he knew that would destroy the whole ship they took. He knew that would be impossible for them to do that. That would be the end of the whole system. That they would probably run away. They wouldn't be able to face their father, and that would be the end of the father's world. He never would do that. Clever. When as a nefesh Yosef b'chorin, there were hundreds of people, and they weren't just lost in one generation. There were hundreds of people that followed Avraham Avinu, and they were called, they were referred to because of the philosophy of Avraham Avinu was known in the world, and the Vagav Shemecha, that everybody knew Avraham had followers, and it wasn't just his son. I mean, Yitzchak Yitzchak Chazor, that's something they knew, that is, he is the one that's carrying over the, he's the successor to the idea. But everybody knew about Avram and all his followers. And the Ivrim were the ones that had, he says, Ki lo yuchlun nitchin lechos ivrim lechem ki so evir mitzrayim. Because, what does it mean? It means because the God that they worship, which was the sheep, so these people, these Ivrim, don't believe in that philosophy, they don't believe in idolatry, and they eat anything. They say that any food is the same. So they say there's nothing special about a sheep. So that's why they eat the sheep. So that's why they couldn't identify, they couldn't eat with them. Because eating is a psychological identification process. You can't identify with people that eat the same thing that you consider to be, that the Egyptians consider to be divine. It's like a horror. They can't identify with such people. But the Ivrim over here are not just 12 people. The Ivrim was the whole group that followed the philosophy of Avraham Avinu that was known in the world. The whole world knew that there is a group of people that follow this philosophy. They don't believe in any of these idols, and they're because in their mind, actually, the Rambam describes them in the Moran Aruchim. In their mind, these people were irreligious people. Avram and his followers were like rationalists, like people that denied the gods. It was like rational people that don't believe in religion, non-religious, irreligious people. That's why they couldn't eat together. And the Mishnah, they didn't say it because what is it? Al Kain Bo Eleinu Hatzara Hazos. Wasn't Aval Hashem Anachnu Lachinu? Why? Hashem Yitzras Mashmah Lachinu Lachinu Lachinu. Al Kain Bo Eleinu Hatzara Hazos. What was the Tzara? Facing the Father. That was a Tzara. There was nothing other than it happened there that was so terrible. What was the terrible Tzara? He's giving him a chance to exonerate themselves and go back, bring back the brother. What's the problem? Yeah. Nothing signed, sealed, and delivered. What was sealed at that moment was one thing. The Tzara was they have to go back to Yaakov. That was the problem. That was the problem. And actually, the riot is the fact that they didn't say anything in the Mishnah 3 days. That's a riot. Because otherwise, yeah, Rashi says the reason why I went to Tengeis is because they were sophisticated psychologically. They knew that this is a, you don't make yourself like Chazal told us in the great. How should a person live and have a good life? He says, don't make yourself outstanding. Make yourself small. That's how you have a good life. That's what he told us in the great. So, make yourself inconspicuous. Make yourself inconspicuous. Anonymous. An anonymous existence is the best existence. Anonymous is anonymity. That's the answer. So they know that the moment you set yourself up, that the people are always down, always going to shoot you down. Because that's the nature of man, is man's aggression and his envy. So that's why they said we should go through separate gates. They were built physically, apparently. They were very powerful men. Because it says, Vayamos Ishal Chamorah. They just took it and they didn't need any help. They took all the... They took the heavy saddlebags and they just picked it up and they just put it on the hamar. They're very powerful physically. And they knew it's going to look strange to see 10 people that have unusual builds physically. And what is it? They don't want to attract attention. But they couldn't tell Yosef this. They couldn't say to Yosef this. They couldn't say that to Yosef. But the Medrash says that they went through it to look for, they were looking for, whatever. So anyway, the interesting question is that we understand why Yosef didn't send the letter to his father. But how did they think he's not going to send the letter? That's somebody asking the question. But how did they think that he's not going to send the letter to his father? Yeah. That was when they sold him as an Eved. How did they take a chance like that? Now here he's going to, they didn't kill him. No. Well, they didn't kill him. No, I think it has to do with human nature. I think it has to do with human nature. Human nature is such that a person doesn't recognize his fate physically. A person doesn't recognize his sin. The person is not too eager to recognize his sin. Situations, you usually need a situation to cause you to recognize him. So, they saw the Father Green, but they held that they were right. You see, you have to realize, they held their decision. Their decision was justified, and that's so simple. Because here was a boy that was arrogant, and he was telling from being the other Yossi, he bust him royal at the end, he's taking Lashon Hara from one to the other, and he's supposed to be the leader? He can't be the leader, he has to be destroyed. That was their decision. It's not such a crazy decision. But and they had something based on the person doesn't want to accept his guilt. Guilt is a hard thing to accept. But then the moment that... They thought they were right. I mean, there's no question about it. The thing that broke over the years, what caused him to break down was not... See, what caused him to break down was not the father grieving. Even though they didn't expect him to keep grieving that long, but that was already in their plan. That already, they knew they're going to have to deal with that. When a person knows he's going to have to deal with something, that factor is not usually a good factor to cause him to repent. Because that was already part of his original plan. What was new was going down to Mitzrayim. See, that was a new situation. And going down to Mitzrayim made them rethink the whole situation. Because they knew he was there. The situation caused them slowly. It started to chisel away slowly at their defenses, and then started to break down. That's the way it was a process. Apparently, they thought that he would never write back. Apparently, they counted on something, and this seems strange, but it seems they counted on him really being totally destroyed, his whole morale being brought down, broken, and being totally destroyed. The Chazal say that when they went to look for him, they went to look for him in Shuk Shal Zonos because they thought that he'll leave everything. He definitely is going to leave everything that he learned because he can't live according to the system anymore. After all, his brothers that were supposed to represent the system sold him and put him in this situation, and they thought he was youthful, he won't be able to cling to Torah and to the ideas anymore, and he doesn't have the support, and therefore what's going to happen is a total moral breakdown, and therefore he'll never write his father back, because he's not going to write to his father if he's not Yosef anymore. They counted on a total moral breakdown of his personality. That's what they counted on. Interesting thing. The truth of the matter is that if he was normally, he would have broken it. Normally, as a matter of fact, the Rav one time said, that's what the Rav said, that those who come from the family of Yosef, of Yechon, says, I'm not worried about an Ayin Hara, because they come from the family of Yosef. So the Rav said very beautifully, what is an Ayin Hara? Ayin Hara is that most people, the way they feel about themselves is totally dependent on the way others view them. He says, like if a Rav gives a speech, he says, he walks down from the bima and he hears one of the Baalbatim and says, he says, he's a broken man. He's a broken man. He says, and next week we'll really give a bad speech. Because it breaks his ego. Most people's ego depend upon the way other people look at them. Okay? So he says, that's what Rabbi Yechanan said. Rabbi Yechanan said that I come from Yosef. Because Yosef was nowhere. Yosef didn't need others. He wasn't dependent on others. Because if he was dependent on others, he would have totally broken down the moment his brother, that's his family, his brothers, they were the ones that supposedly he thought they looked up to him, as a matter of fact. Because he ran after them right away. He told them the Chalam. The second one. You're going to be very excited to hear this one. So although, it's an interesting thing. But you see, then that's why they knew this. And they saw that he's looking for their support. Why is he telling them these dreams? He's looking for their support. He wants their support. So they said, that's why they said that we'll sell him, and then he'll be totally broken down, or he's sold out by his family, and he won't be able to make it, because he is an egoistic person. An egoistic person needs the support. But interestingly enough, it's an interesting thing, but he grew out of that very quickly. Because the Pasuk says, first he was very excited, and he wanted their support. And then they told him the first Chalam, they told him the second Chalam. But then what happened was that when the father told him to go to Shechem to find the brothers, you see an interesting thing. He says, Vayomo Hineni. What does Hineni mean? Hineni means he didn't want to go. He was afraid to go. Hineni means zeros. It means Avram says, Rakadosh Baruch Hu called Avram, Vayomo Hineni. Hineni means I'm ready to do it. It's difficult. We have to overcome certain emotions. What again? What's going to say again? That's it. Why does he say what he says? Inani means zero. Rashi says Rashi is zero. Lashon Hanava is rizos. He's darig when it's vasavos. Va'afal pi shehoi yodeya be'echos shesana. Actually, Rashi spells it out. He says he wasn't stupid. He started to see that they really hate him. As a matter of fact, you see, that's what happened. It says what happened? It says that the moment it says Yishlochayu me'enek chevron v'yelas shema, strange pasuk, mysterious pasuk. And a man found him in a soa basode, blundering in the field. Wandering around the field. Wasn't he wandering around the field? Why was he wandering in the field? What was this wandering? And who was this mysterious person? So Chazal said that was Gavriel. He was wandering in the field because he knew already that this is not good. He said Hineni, but when it came to carrying it out, he was afraid. He was afraid. And because he was afraid, psychologically, he got lost. He was unable to find his way. That happens to be psychological truth. If a person doesn't know exactly how to go somewhere, and he doesn't want to go there, you can be sure he's going to get lost. And actually, it's correct. And actually, sounds funny. You're laughing because you know it's true. Actually, it's happened before. So actually, what does it mean when it says "Vayimtzoeu ish"? Because also "Vayimtzoeu ish v'nei soa basada," a man found him, and they say this was Gavriel. What does it mean? It wasn't a human being. What it means to say is like this: that if it weren't for the Ashgacha, he never would have found the brothers. He couldn't overcome the psychological force. This psychological force, which prevented him, the fear that he knew that this is not good for him to go, was so powerful that he couldn't, he would have gotten lost, and he would try, consciously, he would always try to do mitzvahs of it. But you can't overcome your unconscious. The person is uncapable. Okay. The person is incapable of overcoming. Sometimes the unconscious is too powerful, and as much as the person wants to, he has all good intentions, but he can't help himself.
That was the case of Yosef. He wanted to listen to his father's mitzvah to find his brothers, but his unconscious was too overpowering, and he would have gotten lost. He never would have found them. He would have gone home. But vayimtzo'eyu ish. There was a man there who was there because of the Ashgacha. That was Gavriel, that gave him the directions and told him where his brothers were, because it was predestined that he should go to Mitzrayim. If it wasn't predestined, if it was just normal circumstance, he would have gotten lost and gone back home. I start off with, I said that certain philosophical principles, I thought I mentioned that certain philosophical principles cause people to abandon certain methods which they think they're abandoning because of non-philosophical methods. What I meant was that Chazal, that you find fish and mice, that a person thinking, who knows God's Ashgacha? So I've got to look into my own life and do tshuva. I don't know, who knows? So therefore he never looks into his personal life. That's incorrect, that's improper. Okay. Donnie Myers brought a beautiful riot to what we were saying before. In the Piyut on Yom Kippur, where it says where the Melech said that he's gonna kill the Sorgan Malchus, because it's not historically exactly correct, but it's a Malchus. He's gonna kill the Sorgan Malchus. Why? Because their forefathers sold Yosef. So he trumped up this charge against them. So they said to no one of mine shloshes yomim, and to see him on a chayovin vashen and nizbol b'gzeras tzu alam. So that's what they said. That was their answer. And this was, your charges are not important, but if we're really chayev, then we'll accept the charges. Okay. I mentioned that a chazal says that if it's not because of little Torah, if it can't, then it's because of yisurin shalavim. Which means, Rashi says, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives me Yisurim, so he should have a bigger chel than Alma Bar. It means to remove the person from the situation of his attachment to the physical. It's a different kind of perfection. That's for rare individuals. That the Tochach is for those that he loves, to raise them to a higher level. Okay. This one had one point. I was discussing with Rav Meir, he brought up a good point. Because it says by Reuven, it says by Yan Reuven also. Hello, right? So first they said, "Avol Hashem manachnu alachinu." They were responsible, and then it says, "Vayan Ruvenu osom lema alo mati lechem." So it sounds like he's trying to defend himself. You see, moreover, the term "vayan" is always an answer to a question, right? So what I want to say is like this: the Torah with the word "vayan" shows you an interesting thing. That actually they said, "Avol Hashem manachnu alachinu." We're all guilty. And to say that we're all guilty means that they're sharing the guilt evenly. And moreover, it means that that Reuven really is more responsible because he's the oldest of the group. So it was really a subtle attack on Reuven. It was an implied attack. And Reuven felt that that's not really a tshuva. If a person disguises something, it's not a tshuva gemara. So it says, "Vayan Reuven also lemar." He answered them and he said, "I told you, Alo amate lechem otachatil v'yelav alosh mate." Don't say we. We are all guilty. There's a difference between the levels of guilt of your level of guilt and my level of guilt. You see? And therefore, it lacks in tshuva if a person really sees he was a chote and he says, "Well, we all were in this together." That was a mitigating type of statement. So the Torah is interesting, beautiful thing. The Torah with one word, "Vayan," shows you this idea that it was that Reuven immediately picked up on it and said, "One second, this is a sharing of the guilt, which is not proportionate, not correct, not a correct proportion." And that's why he's setting straight. It would have lacked in truth if they didn't have the full realization of the fate. If they blame it on, they share. If you share the blame with somebody, when in an unjustified way, it lacks.